Hello and welcome to this Meetings Today podcast. I'm Tyler Davidson, Vice President and Chief Content Director for Meetings Today. And joining us today is a modern cuisine and equally the business of cuisine pioneer, really an enduring legend, Wolfgang Puck of Wolfgang Puck Fine Dining Group, Wolfgang Puck Catering, and Wolfgang Puck Worldwide. We're going to talk about the 25th anniversary of Wolfgang Puck Catering, a storied history and current and future trends in meetings and F&B. Welcome, Wolfgang. Thanks for joining.
Thank you. Good to have you. Thank you.
Reading your bio in the beginning of your career, and I think you started off when you were 14, and really inspired by your mother, which is a story I hear from so many chefs that I interview.
Totally, totally. You know, I was lucky. My mother was a chef also, you know, and I used to spend every summer at the hotel where she was working with the pastry chef, making sweets and eating ice cream and sweets and everything. I was better than just lying on the beach, you know.
Well, and then you worked at some of the top restaurants in France, which is really like a pedigree career trajectory. And then you kind of gave that all up and came to the U.S. when you were 24 and to Indianapolis, of all places. What sort of guided that?
Well, because I love auto racing. I used to live in Monaco, you know, and they have the big Formula One race there. And the 500 miles from Indianapolis were always fascinating when they said they have 350,000 people there watching the race and looked like a big stadium. And so I was always intrigued by that. And, you know, in the old time, it was more international. You had drivers from Europe driving and all different kind of cars. Now it's more like an American thing. So when somebody offered me a job in Indianapolis, I said, oh my God, I want to go to Indianapolis. That sounds great. It must be like Monaco. Yeah. So then I took the Greyhound bus from New York City to Indianapolis, which took like a day and a half or so. And then finally I arrived there and I said, shit, that's Indianapolis. It's nothing like what I expected it to be. So I said, where is the racetrack? So I went to the racetrack and I said, it looked terrible. It was in November, I think, so when I got there. So it was nothing like I expected it to be. And especially at that time, restaurants were very poor in the way of what I expected, you know. But we had a French restaurant there called La Tour. And that was a pretty good restaurant. You know, the president of the Indiana National Bank was a very Francophile guy. He bought all this Christoffel silver and Christoffel pastry cards and everything. And we cut the duck in front of the guests. And I cooked more well-done steaks than a year there than I did the rest of my culinary life, I think so. But you know, I had to start working there because I had no money to leave. So I worked there, got my green card there, and then moved to LA.
And the rest is history, right? I mean,
so they say,
Well, you've really achieved a number of firsts. I think you were the first and only chef to have won the James Beard Outstanding Chef Award multiple times.
Yeah.
You really pioneered Asian fusion cuisine. And really, I mean, you were the first celebrity chef. And also the first big name chef to open multiple restaurants in Las Vegas. I mean, what do you think about all of this you've created and your influence on modern restaurant cuisine and really the way Americans cook and perceive cuisine? I mean,
yeah, you know, it was so funny. Some of the things we do out of necessity. So when I opened Spago, and when I was at Ma Maison before, Patrick Terrai, who was the owner of the restaurant, he basically pushed me in the background. You know, I remember like Donald Sutherland used to come to dinner and he loved food. You know, he was from Montreal or somewhere like that. And he said, oh, make me something. And I made him a menu. And then I went out to talk to him. He wanted to talk to me. And Patrick basically pushed me on the side and said, no, let me talk to him. The same thing was with television. I remember I had to prepare for Patrick like a fish in puff pastry, for a salad, how to put together a salad, and for the TV. And I remember one time it was Dinah Shore. You know, she used to have a famous TV show at that time in the 80s. And one time, then Dinah came to dinner at Spago and made her a dinner, and she loved it. And she called me out and said, "Sit down, have a glass of wine with me," and everything, which was really nice. And I sat with her, and she said, "Oh, you're such a nice guy. I don't understand why you don't want to do TV." And I said, "What TV?" She said, "Yeah, I ask Patrick always about if you can come and do some television chef, and he told me you don't do TV, he is doing the TV." So without ever asking me, so I said, "You never asked me, so that's why I never went on." So when I built Spago, then I said, the kitchen should be front and center. People should see the chefs because, generally 60-70% of the sales of a restaurant is food, and food is important, So I know the ambiance, the hospitality is just as important. But in the old time, nobody knew the chef in a restaurant. Everybody knew the manager or the owner or so forth, So it was so different. So I built a kitchen and a dining room, and I democratized it a little bit because I thought there was no good pizza place in LA where you couldn't get a good pizza. And so I said, "I'm going to build a wood burning oven." And there was none of that in LA, And then the fire department said, "Okay, you can build it as long as the customers cannot touch the fire or things like that." And then I said, "I'm going to make pizzas, but I'm not going to make the pizzas like in Italy, with tomato sauce and mozzarella. I'm going to make Or with pepperoni, like you could get in the cheap pizza places in America." So I said, "I'm gonna make my own duck sausage. I used fresh Santa Barbara shrimps, and then we made it with smoked salmon and caviar and so forth." So it was a different thing. So that really changed the way people thought about pizza. I remember with Linda Evans and all these people came and had a slice of pizza before dinner.
And then, let's talk about Wolfgang Puck Catering, your 25th anniversary. What made you decide to go into the catering area of the business?
So it was like just like with our frozen pizza. We started a frozen pizza line, and it was because of Johnny Carson. Johnny Carson, the Tonight Show host, he used to take pizzas home and freeze them. And I said, "What do you mean you're freezing my pizza? That's not allowed. It's all about fresh and everything." And he says, "No, they're very good frozen too. When we take it out, put it in the oven. When I play cards late at night, I want a snack. Your pizzas are perfect." So then I tried to make them, and the first one I cooked it well done, like normally at the restaurant, then froze it, and it was dry a little bit. Then I cooked it less and less. And then I said, "If you do it right, it's actually not bad, because they're good ingredients. The cheese was the same and everything. I just had to put a little less fontina because fontina has a lot of fat content." So, and then I started a frozen pizza business. And then with the catering, we did catering from Spago, from the old Spago. I remember it was so difficult because the kitchen was so small and everything. And we did parties for Marvin Davis. His daughter got married, or the bar mitzvahs for some of his grandkids and so on. But for Michael Ovitz, we did parties at his house when he had IMP come and design his new office building. So we did a little bit catering only for our customers from the restaurant. And then the Academy asked me to do the Academy Awards.
The
And
governor's
so,
ball, right? The governor's ball,
the governor's ball.
which I was lucky enough to attend in your kitchen maybe
Yeah.
4 years ago, and you guys did an
Yeah.
amazing job. But please
Yeah.
continue.
So it was funny. So then I did it the first time at the Shrine Auditorium. And then the next time we did it at the Music Center, and there I met Carl Schuster, who used to run the Music Center for Restaurant Associates. And then we became friendly, and we started to talk about catering, and he was really into catering. Me was like a little sideline only. I said, "We do it for our good customers, that's it." And then we started a catering company together. So I told Carl, "You tell me what you want and we can do it, and you have to run it because I don't have enough time. Obviously, I will be there when we do the parties and everything, but also running a business, there's so many little things like getting the staff, getting all the things. It's a lot of work." I said, "I don't gonna do that. You have to do that." So he said, "Yeah, I know how to do that." I said, "Great, then we have a partnership." And we started our catering company.
How has the catering industry changed since you launched yours 25 years ago?
Well, I think it has changed because we didn't do corporate catering at that time. You know, we did mostly weddings, bar mitzvahs, and stuff like that. You know, people fancy dinners in people's houses for 20 people, 10 people, or 150 people. A lot of these benefit dinners in the big houses in Beverly Hills and Bel Air. You know, so that was our main business. And it's only later on where we started, you know, to do more corporate events and corporate businesses. So, like Sony Pictures and NBC Universal and things like that, which was in a way good or is good because it keeps us a good staff. We can pay the people, good chefs and whatsoever. And then if we do a big party somewhere at night, they can come and help and make extra money.
Transitioning, I've been covering the meetings industry for, more than 20 years. And, and one kind of constant issue in it is food waste, because you're feeding so many people. What are you guys doing at Wolfgang Puck Catering to sort of address that and in even any other sustainability sort of drives or issues you might have?
So we always try to be the best. We never try to compete on price. I said, you want us? We don't do cheap food. You know, we don't go to Costco and buy chicken pot pie and then serve it to guests like some caterers do, or buy pastries and then serve them, you know. So you have, don't need any labor, you know, whatever it is. So for us, it's always about our reputation. And I said, you know, at the end of the day, that's all we have. Yes, we make some money, we eat and drink well, but we're never gonna be like Warren Buffett or any of these guys, you know? So we're always gonna be proud of what we do, you know? I think that's really for me an important part. If we do something, we have to be proud of that. And by, if you wanna be proud, you have to do a great job. So we need enough staff to do it right. And we have to buy the right ingredients. You know, we cannot cheat on the ingredients. I always say, you know, our reputation, our restaurants, you know, we have them all over. If I do a party somewhere, I just do it to make extra money and give not a great experience to the guest, it won't work because then they won't come to the restaurant. So everything has to be like with that in mind. So we have to be really good at what we do and do the best we can do. And you know, we are not for everybody, but so is Mercedes is not for everybody either, you know. So you want a Mercedes or you want a Porsche, it costs more money than a Toyota.
And I suppose too, like when you talk about the best ingredients, a lot of that time that translates into sourcing it locally or seasonality.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's something that's always, that sort of sustainability angle has always been present in what you do.
Totally, you know, especially when we started out, you know, we went to the farmers market, got everything delivered, and then we used it for the parties. Just the same thing as at the restaurant, and we used the same purveyors, you know, the same meat purveyors, fish purveyors, whatever it is. And even when we grew bigger, like we are in Atlanta, for example, which is quite far away, when we do a party at the Georgia Aquarium, we always go and use local people, local ingredients as much as we can.
And then how do you incorporate? I mean, everyone, it seems like, has specific dietary needs today. You're gluten-free, of course, allergy concerns, religious concerns. How do you incorporate, the attendees' dietary needs in the event menu planning process?
Well, I think we always have different things for everybody, and we actually consider religious things. Like I was up at Netflix yesterday. You know, we do their commissary there, and we had a day. Their lunch was like food what Muslims were to eat. You know, from Saudi Arabia, from the Middle East. So we had a Middle Eastern team. Every meat, the lamb, and everything was halal. So everybody was happy. And the people who are not religious, they got an experience they thought they wouldn't get it. So it becomes an experience. And it's fun for the chefs because they have to think out of the box. They have to think, okay, how are we going to do a shawarma? How are we going to do all that stuff? You know, how are we going to make a, you know, baklava and things like that? So I think that's really an important part. And I like it that we can be flexible. Like if we do the Oscars, I have like five chefs just doing special requests. And, you know, a lot of people are vegetarian, but when they're so hungry, they are not vegetarian anymore. So it's interesting to see. But we always take care of that. You know, we always have really good vegetarian food. Like we have a great mushroom risotto or some asparagus risotto, whatever it is. So when people eat it, they don't feel like, okay, that's... they pushed me on the side. I want them to be just as happy as the customers, as the other customers. And I remember when I did Cut, like in 2006, Richard Meyer designed the restaurant. I had him design a plate for the vegetarian. I said, if somebody comes to the restaurant and there is a, the people love steak and they want only vegetables or the vegetarian or vegans, we're going to give them even more. So I designed a plate with four inserts, really, not inserts, but the way it was shaped. So I could put in one a risotto, I could in one a Hunan eggplant, I could put another thing in another place. So that way they actually got all these different tastes. And it's a challenge for the chef, but it's also good for the guest. You know, when they go home and say, oh my God, I had my best vegetarian dinner at Cut, people look at them and says, I thought it's a steakhouse.
That's very interesting. What questions do you think a planner of a meeting or event should ask a catering company or your catering company?
Well, I think I really think if a planner comes and they have to trust us, you know, it's a trust. We, as I said before, our reputation is the most important part. So, you know, we do what we do and we know how to do it right. And I think that's really if a party planner, an event planner, whatever, they shouldn't come in with an idea of what somebody else did. They should talk to us and say, so what do you do, how you do it? And, you know, for us, that's really the easiest way. It's like a guest in a restaurant who tells us, you know, just cook for us. I'm a vegetarian or I have allergies for nuts or whatever. Or I don't eat pork and we can make a great menu that way. So that way, I think for events and everything, you know, we have to be flexible. We have to adapt to the thing. But it's definitely, you know, I think we have great chefs and I think they can cook a lot of different things really well.
You know, everyone in the meetings industry and really any business in general is struggling with staffing issues since the pandemic. Yeah, how has it affected Wolfgang Puck Catering? And yeah, how do you manage to still deliver such a quality experience with probably challenges that everyone's facing now?
You know, we have a great group of people who work with us for many years. Yes, some of them were on furlough for a while, but then at the end they came back. We pay them well now and everything. And I think they know they also have a future. It's how do you set it up? If somebody is young and is a sous chef somewhere and they have to see, okay, we're going to do catering in Atlanta. We need a catering chef there. We get somebody who knows our culture and send them there. So there are opportunities. And I think it's an important part in our restaurants and in catering to give people opportunities.
And, you know, moving on to trends, what new and innovative trends are you seeing in catering? And do changing demographics affect those trends?
You know, I think people know much more now about ethnic foods and things like that. Whereas before, people said, oh, no, I don't want to have some Indian dishes or some Thai dishes or some Latin American dishes. Whereas now they're very popular and people really like them. So, and the same thing is with us. You know, we have to make them, and we have a lot of chefs from all over, you know. So if I have a guy from Mexico and they know about the flavor of Mexico, so I said, show me how you made a great taco, or what you stuff it with, or what you use it for, or if you make a mole, show me how you make the mole. And they have some of the chefs who did an amazing job. I say, wow, this is really good, we can put it on the menu. So it's really very inclusive. So, and we run it very democratic. It's not like Eric or me who says this is the way. So we talk to everybody and feel everybody involved in it.
And I think, consumers have a much greater passion for food and experiences and experiencing other cultures. That really must make you happy to have a
Totally. That's a lot to say about television. Food TV has become so popular. I remember in the beginning, I did television like Good Morning America in the 80s and some late night. David Letterman was on late at night. So there was no food TV. So n then the Food Network came along, and at the beginning, they didn't do much. But now you have so many different channels who do food and all this competition going on, and the young kids look at it and they get interested in it and they see interesting things. So it has gone to a whole new level because of television. Because when you think really the magazine business has suffered, because of that, the food magazine thing. So you still have Bon Appetit, but I'm sure most of the people get everything online. Gourmet magazine, which was my favorite one, they stop it, and which was very sad to see because I'm still a guy who reads newspapers and magazines.
Well, thank you for that. As a person who edits magazines, I appreciate
Yeah, no,
that.
totally. Every Saturday, I get five newspapers. I get three during the week. I get the New York Times, the New York Post, and the LA Times. And then on Saturday, on top of that, I got the Financial Times from London, and I get the Wall Street Journal.
Wow.
And when I fly, I always go to the airport and I always buy magazines,
Right, everyone loves a magazine on a flight, I think.
Yeah, no, I love it. A lot of people now they look it on the computer and everything, but for me it's different. I love to have a magazine in my hand or a book in my hand instead of just looking it on my TV.
Well, thank you for joining us. One final question. After so many years on the top of the proverbial mountain, what keeps you inspired and motivated to keep moving forward every day?
Well, I'm passionate for what I do, and I love what I do. And a lot of people say, why you still go to the restaurant? Why you still go to the catering? Why you go see Eric and Pam, who run our catering company, and Gary, and I talk to them and everything. And it's like, for me, it's like a big family business. So I'm very excited, but also to see the business grow. Like our catering company, during the pandemic, basically we went down to zero. So now we are in business again for the second year. So now I think our year finishes in October, and we think we're gonna do over $150 million in revenue. So starting from zero to go up there, and we can do it because we have great people working for us, and Pam Brunson and Eric Klein and Gary, the pastry chef. So we have such a strong team, plus the ones who they work with in all the outlets and everything. So I think for me, it's exciting to see these people growing up, getting better, and also feel so passionate about it. And Eric, for example, the chef, he goes into the dining room when we do a wedding, he's out there talking to the people and everything. So it's really good to see to get involved with the people, and I think an important part with us in catering is to engage with our guests because we have to make them feel good. So hospitality, we are the hospitality business, we serve food. A lot of stores, Bed Bath and Beyond, who's went just under, then the hospitality business. But they didn't do a good job because they cut, and you didn't get great service. So for us, hospitality is just as important as buying good ingredients because we want to give the people an experience when they come to us because we have outlets in the airports and we have outlets, obviously restaurants all over the place and catering in many different places now too. So it's really, I think, an important part to give people an experience. So if it's in the airport, like my sister just flew back to Austria, she was here, and in Vienna we have a restaurant in the airport, but it's at the arrival, so people go there to eat. So they have offices, at the airport, whatever. So they all go to our restaurant and eat. And we got the review, I think, on Yelp of one of these things. They said, "Oh, the best Wiener Schnitzel in Vienna is at the airport." So I said, "Oh my God!" They were so excited, and I have the same chefs there since we opened up. And I think it's great to see to have good talent, and even at the airport, because our reputation, as I said, is the most important thing. So.
Well, you cover all the bases. You really do.
Okay.
Thank you, Wolfgang. I
Thank
appreciate
you.
your
Good to
time.
talk to you.
You
Yeah.
too.
Thank you.
And
Thank you.
that was fine dining and catering legend Wolfgang Puck of Wolfgang Puck Dining Group, Wolfgang Puck Catering, and Wolfgang Puck Worldwide. I'm Tyler Davidson, Vice President and Chief Content Director of Meetings Today. Thanks for joining us for this Meetings Today podcast. If you're interested in more of our podcasts with meetings industry thought leaders, just head on over to meetingstoday.com and check out our podcast section. So, hope you enjoyed our podcast today, and whatever you're up to with the rest of the day, go out and make it a great one.